society became more and more industrialized in the last few hundred years, the concept of God, or God as an individual, or a force in the world, became more and more clean, less and less involved feature in the life of all of us. And the churches and places of worship gradually became decrepit. I lived in England for about 6 years, and the churches were very conspicuous by the fact that they were usually clustered with soot and black from the exhaust of the buses and people in the cars. And maybe once a week, there'd be a little activity. People get their going to the church for 1 hour every Sunday. Maybe a few people. And I visited one of them. It was very cold inside in the winter. It was warm, cold weather. So it was a very comfortable place to be. And then I noticed also, as I arrived this temple on a warm summer night, that the pubs, the public houses, the taverns, the bars, the wine cellars, were full of people sitting out on the tables under their umbrellas and having a great time every night, not just Sunday or Saturday, but every night. So camaraderie and fellowship was taking place only under the influence of intoxication. But in the environment of a church, where there's an organ and a choir and God and so on, except of course the Hare Krishna temple, that was a good service, one didn't see any happening, any activity, any life. So this has an indication, this is an indication of what society has become, that there's great erosion of values. And in this country, when I was young, I grew up pledging allegiance to the United States of America. We had to stand on this and pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. One country under God, for liberty and justice for all. Probably that's where it went. And I left out a few churches. But anyway, while I was in school, they took out the under God phrase. It was taken out. And we were told, well, you don't say that anymore. You just say, one country for liberty and justice for all. And that was it. Every day we had to say that. I don't think they didn't really say it anymore, but anyway, God was taken out as a picture for all the young people then. We thought, well, okay, that's the traditional way that that's what being taught by our teachers, so that must be where it's at, if God is no longer involved in our lives. And so this is secularism, this is the invasion of secularism. In some ways they reinvent the philosophy of separation of church and state by saying that no religious principles can be valid or any value judgment. Now, when I got to college, we were made to think that making value judgments was the wrong thing to do. You simply assemble information, empirical data, and then you gradually come to a conclusion. But if you enter what we call the value judgment into the picture, then you weren't being intellectual in pursuit or honest. You were introducing a bias into your understanding. And therefore, we were taught that values were not important. And now, some 30 years later, maybe you're in my age, actually more like 40, the churches, at least I saw this in Philadelphia, all over Pennsylvania. There were big billboards advertising Catholic schools. And the sign said, schools with values. Schools with values. In other words, there were no more values in public schools. And a private school, and a parochial school, and a religious school, at least the children might be taught how to open the door for an older person, how not to swear, how not to break the glass in the classroom, how not to be at the teacher, bring drugs to school, or guns. Now we have metal detectors in all of the schools, so they can find guns. We have other detectors to find cocaine at that point. Some 80, 30 years ago, the big problem in school was chewing gum, running in the hall, talking, and the teacher was talking. And now they're major crime problems. Rape, murder, things like that. So, this is in large part the result of the secularization. That values were considered unimportant, that then what will be the value? The value of just common sense, common decency. Well, when there is no God consciousness left in society, when religious principles are excluded in the name of separating church and state, in the name of separating religious principles from government, then we have what is called a godless society, a godless civilization. The civilization that we're living in now is very much that way. And people have become very numbed by this. They become numbed into intensity. And they become so numb that they're sometimes fighting against the indecency and immorality of today's society. There's groups for decency in television, for example. There's groups that are for decency in advertising, and so on. But because God is not in the picture, it's very difficult to bring morality or sanity back to society. Because the essence of morality, the fountainhead of all good, right, and proper things, is to have God consciousness or devotional service. This is the purpose of being a human being, to be God conscious. Otherwise, we are no different than animals. We eat, we mate, and the animals do the same thing in less elaborate way. And what sustains our ability to be good citizens, or good members of society, valuable moral people, is knowing what the ultimate fountainhead of morality is, and that is coming from God, or God consciousness. So to think we can have morality by injecting it ourselves, by everyone thinking their own morality is reality, is wrong. Because everyone has a different idea of what is right and what is moral. If the serial killers that sit in the jail waiting for execution believe, they honestly think that their morality is the highest morality. What they did was moral, because society is immoral. So this is an extreme example that everyone has their own concept of morality. And because each person is individual and different, these different concepts, they intersect. And just like waves, you've got two different zones into the water, you'll see the waves will intersect and interfere with each other. So people are always interfering with each other, because Bosnia thinks what they're doing is morality, and Serbia thinks what they're doing is morality, and Croatia and Slovenia. They all thought they were doing the moral thing, the right thing. But what was the result? So much bloodletting. And the same thing in Northern Ireland and in many different parts of the world. These are just some examples. So, what does the Bhagavatam have to say about this? Very interesting. There's a verse that Prabhupada quotes a lot. It's the residents of Jungle Gleam, giving oblations to the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord. And they say, yes, yes, Bhakti Bhagavati Kinshana. Karvaya Guna Shatra Samasate Sura. Marava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadurama Rura Tenata Vidara Soma. And Prabhupada translates this as follows. All the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of God, their Bhakti. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service, that is, without knowledge or behavior, towards the Supreme Personality of God, without knowledge of, without devotional behavior. Without devotional service, devoid of devotional service, and engaged in material activities, has no good qualities. But that sounds very severe, because you might know some atheists who seem to have very good qualities. So the Bhagavatam goes on to say that even one who is adept at the practice of mystic yoga, or the honest endeavor of maintaining relatives and family, must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good quality in such a person? So the point that is being made here is that the concept of God, or going back to Godhead, is the root of morality. It's the root of values and goodness in society. So we have styled, for example, the Krishna consciousness movement as consciousness of Krishna, Krishna meaning God. And the magazine of the movement is called Back to Godhead. Why Godhead? Why cannot we just live out our karma, be good people, be moral people, be upstanding, be correct, be obedient, and offer service to others, offer service to humanity? So it said in the Bible, I think it was Lazarus who asked, what is when you speak the philosophy of Christianity in two sentences. And the first sentence was, love thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind. And the second was, love thy neighbor as thyself. But in secularism, we have it turned around. We're loving our neighbor as ourselves. And then if we have time, or the will, or the belief, or the faith, then we will love God. But Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and all the great munis and sages and rishis in our line of succession, they emphasize that God must first be the same. Then and only then can we really love all human beings. Not even humans, not only human beings, but all animals. And therefore, devotees of Krishna, they won't harm animals. They won't take meat. They won't take fish. They won't eat anything. Because they have real love for all, not only beings, they're all of them. But that's what love of God actually means. That's what understanding God is. And that's what devotional service is. And it's by doing and acting devotional service that we become God conscious. God consciousness is not a static thing. It's not like some electrical current that strikes us and we become touched by the magic wand of God and for some yogi in Himalayas, and then we become Krishna. It's based on developing a relationship with Krishna. Just as we have to develop every relationship, there's no such thing as a static relationship. Even between mother and son, or father and daughter, father and son, husband and wife, it has to build upon mutual service. Otherwise, it's a bad relationship. It's just a relationship in name. It's like, I love God, but I don't do anything for God. He doesn't do anything for me, I think so. That's a dead relationship. Devotional service means it's a living, active, ongoing, deepening, increasing activity. That's what devotional service is. And that's actually what makes us not only aware that God exists, but that we have, that we know God exists, that we realize God exists, and that we have a relationship with Krishna. And that's what devotional service is all about. That's what the Krishna consciousness movement is about. It's an opportunity to give everyone in society a chance to do something, anything, for God, for Krishna, and to develop that relationship. And thereby gaining all good qualities. Otherwise, what good qualities do we have? We have some. But even the very best of people we find are sometimes implicated in very unfortunate things. We see some of our own leaders in the government, or in the church, or in science, and psychology, and such. In the academic world, philosophers who are putting forth ideas to improve the quality of life in human society, and some are succeeding, but then we find that their personal lives are a wreck, and we become very disappointed and discouraged and disappointed by our president, and so many scandals keep erupting all around us. We want to have faith in one person to lead us, but it's very difficult to find faith in anybody. Anybody who is not truly God conscious. So it is also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the leader of society has to share 1/6 of all the reactions of the subjects. The president and the citizens, the king or queen and the subject, 1/6 of the reactions, good or bad. So therefore one is advised not to get into this position, not to get into the position of being responsible for others. Even one's own children. It's said in the Bhagavatam, famous verse, Dharanasya, Svajano Nasasya, one who cannot deliver his dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipful demigod. And the same is repeated by Prabhupada when he discusses about government leaders. It's also a great responsibility that if one is to lead a government, one should be like a Rajarishi. A spiritual person and develop good qualities. Without developing devotional service, those good qualities won't develop. So Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Chaitanya writes about what are good qualities. And good qualities will come when one is God conscious. So he lists, very interesting, 26 qualities of a human being of good qualities. And I'll read them there as follows. One, very kind to everyone. Two, does not make anyone his enemy. Three, he is truthful. 4, is equal to everyone. 5, no one can find any fault in him. 6, he is magnanimous. 7, he is mild. 8, he is always clean. 9, he is without possessions. 10, he works for everyone's benefit. 11, he is very peaceful. 12, he is very surrendered to Krishna. 13, he has no material qualities. 14, he is very meek. 15, he is steady. 16, he controls the senses. 17, he does not eat more than required. 18, he is not influenced by the Lord's illusory energy. 19, he respects everyone. He offers his respect to everyone. 20, he does not desire any respect for himself. 21, he is very great. 22, he is merciful. 23, he is friendly. 24, he is poetic. 25, he is expert. And 26, he is silent. So these are the qualities. Sarvaya Ganeshtakasamasate Sura, the residents of Jambudvipa are talking about, that automatically develop in the mind and body and consciousness of one who is devoted. Nonetheless, Krishnadas Kaviraj enumerates these, specifies what they are. And this indicates that one should be measuring the quality of one's devotional service by seeing how much these qualities are actually manifest. So the two things are complementary. One is that we try to develop the good qualities, and side by side, we try to develop our Krishna consciousness so that these qualities will also develop and sustain themselves. So both things are there. And these things are kind of a check or a balance, as it were, on whether we are actually becoming more conscious, whether we're becoming elevated in spiritual life, whether we're becoming proper human beings. The fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also very wonderful because it explains, and especially in the teachings of Vrishabdev to his son, what human life is meant for. And in here he says, Nayam Nayam Deha Deha Kajami Loke Kastam Kamanara Dikitu Jamye Tapo Divyam Bhutaka Yena Shatma Sujet Yasma Brahma Sukham Yanaka. And in this verse, the most important part of it says that one, meaning a human being, should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified. And when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. Again, this is what makes a human being a truly human and separates our animal instincts from our higher sentiments, of human instincts or human sentiments. And Prabhupada writes this in the purport. It is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage, enable them to become blissful and happy. Bhakti yoga should be taught. The foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or a dog. The instructions of Vrishabdev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. A man travels during his life of leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again, he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office, he works hard from 9 to 5, and then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating, he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex. Vrishabdev clearly states that human life is not meant for this time of existence, which is enjoyed even by hogs and dogs. So this may sound all very harsh to us, calling us all dogs and hogs, but when we examine philosophically the condition of the human situation, it is not a very pleasant one, unless one adds the element of God consciousness. And then life changes. Life changes, and one works very hard. We all work very hard. We have to act. And we have to maintain our situations, our bodies, our families. But if God is put at the center of our lives, all of that effort, all of that hard work, all of that protection all of that nurturing of the relationships becomes important. It becomes not only important, but it becomes sacred. What has happened in a secular world is that we have, to quote one sociologist, we have de-secularized the world. We've made everything unsacred. There's nothing sacred left. But Krishna conscious people think the trees are sacred, the grass is sacred, all the animals are sacred. And by knowing that everything is actually sacred, that God is within the heart of everyone, as Paramatma, we're very reverential. We must be. We wouldn't get into a war about somebody over being in a different faith. Prabhupada even once said that partition never would have happened if people had been a little more open-minded. Of course, probably the British that caused it to happen. But still, he said, if we had not been so denominationally minded, that is Hindus versus Muslims, one is good and one is bad, that this big chunk of land that we once into would not have split away and broken off. Because we were taught by the great sages and rishis and the Goswamis that there is God in everyone, and that everyone is actually conscious of Krishna, but they don't know. I think we're getting a lot of congestion in the back. Would you mind just moving in this direction about as far as you can? Towards the altar. There's a lot of people in front of me trying to get in. Thank you very much. A Krishna conscious state, not a secular state, but a God conscious state, the kind that existed in the times of the Rajarishis, is what we are really aiming for as devotees of Krishna. This is what we want to, we're working for it. We want to see it happen. We want to purify ourselves, anyone who has dependents, but to speak of the government people and politicians, they have so many dependents. They're supposed to be the guardians of the whole society, and therefore they have to share in 1/6 of the karmic reaction, good or bad. So that's what we are working for. We're working on ourselves, and we're working on making society God-conscious rather than God-less, making it full of God-consciousness. This was one of the legacies Prabhupada bequeathed to us, to work in that direction, and try to elevate and benefit and uplift society. That's the meaning of the Krishna consciousness, to return God back to society and to let people understand that secularism is not the way forward for human society. At least God's principles, godly spiritual religious principles should be in society. At the very least, those principles should be there. And it means we have to be nice to the Catholics and Buddhists and Muslims, and so be it. Because everyone is actually God-conscious in a way. They don't maybe have all the details and all the information at their fingertips. But everyone needs to be educated in devotional service and to understand the meaning of what God-consciousness and devotional service is. So we'll stop there, and we're going to chant Japa together in a few moments. So you might have some questions about this topic, or you might want to ask something. Yes, Chandra. Chandra, I'm sorry. So the question is that Chandra said that in prior ages we find in Mahabharata that there were saintly kings who ruled according to God conscious principles. But now in present society, at least in this country, church and state are to be separate because the government doesn't want a ruling church, a ruling God consciousness separate denomination. So the point here is not that Hindus or Muslims or Catholics should rule, but that devotional service should rule, that there should be godly spiritual principles, the basic principles of God consciousness from standard books of knowledge, that let it be known that we are not the bodies that we live in, we're spirit souls, we're the same quality of God but different in quantity, that we have a duty to serve God, that we can perform devotional service by reciting God's name, and that's something that we find in all scriptures. got the name of God the Son, Islamic, and Christian, and Jewish, and the Hindu churches, the name of God is revered everywhere. So to propagate the name of God is to propagate the Yuga Dharma, to propagate that one. So if the leaders of society will simply take advice from godly persons, just that much, and restore the end of God, God is not sectarian. God is not a Hindu or a Muslim or a Catholic. Put God back in the Pledge of Allegiance for human's sake, for everyone's sake. That's the desire of the Christian consciousness. And in the European Union, in the European community, they've made a very strong resolution that certain sects are very dangerous and they should be outlawed. And that means that they can, that these kinds of laws were passed under Adolf Hitler. And in Russia, we were talking last Sunday, we'll bring it up later on when we have the announcements. They're in the process of passing a law that would make religion, except for the Russian Orthodox Church and the Muslim religion who've been there for centuries, would make them unable to practice. So repressive. It's more repressive than the laws that were passed under Joseph Stalin. So these are some examples of how secular society is becoming. And in this country, we find that the government, it looks like, is willing to give most favored nation status to China, even though there's so many horrible human rights abuses going on in that country, so much institutionalized atheism. I mean, I'm not trying to criticize the American government. I'm just trying to show how secular society has become, how little attention is paid to the principles of God consciousness, how this isn't even raised. It's not even an issue how these people, atheists, are God consciousness. Matter of trade will, prevail. It seems money will prevail over God. And that's not helpful. That's definitely not helpful. So at least there should be some basic principles of God consciousness. God, who I am, what is God? That's the idea. If secularism is not suitable, and of course it's died. It doesn't have to be one ruling religion, one ruling denomination, but the basic principles need to be there. Any others? Yes. How does one atone for killing a bug? Every time we breathe, usually, there's some living entities in the air. And you know that there's some groups, I think James, they wear a thing over there, a filter over their mouth, they won't breathe in harm insects. And invariably we will. We'll step on insects or in the kitchen, and of course we're eating and cooking, some insects will die. So the way that we make amends for this, and this is karma, this creates karma. You may know the story of Bhadrari the hunter. After he became a Vaishnava, he was a hunter. And when he saw Narada Muni and came running towards him, he was running in a very broken field fashion because he didn't want to step on any of the ants. He had become completely changed. But the point is that if we recite the holy name of God in Kali Yuga, there's so many simple activities that occur inadvertently. We will not only atone, but we will eradicate the reaction of all these sinful actions. In fact, it is stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that by engaging in the process of devotional service, which includes constantly chanting the holy name, we will eradicate the reactions of more simple activities than we can actually commit. That's how powerful devotional service is. And it is also said in the Brahma Samhita, that Sindhu Gopam Apagandha Mahosta Kama, Bandana Rupam Padana Balamunji, that because Krishna is the controller of all the simple and pious reactions from everyone, from the Indra Gopa Dharma up to Indra. If one engages in devotional service to him, then one is free from all reactions. So, in so many ways, devotional service is the root of our success. And once you wholeheartedly engage in devotional service, you have nothing to lose but a little investment in time in chanting God's holy name. So, we're going to chant together now. Everyone has speech, I think. You can do this anywhere. If you have a nice altar at home, you can sit in front of your picture of your deities and pray peacefully.
sing the holy names of God. So,
somewhere there may be a sign. I'll just repeat the words. Oh yeah, right up there on the wall,
right above the doorway.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then we go around this string of beads, starting at the stomach bead here, and then coming back around. That's one time around. So we chant all together, and we'll start at the same place and finish at the same place. All right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare.